politics, family, culture, and everything in between. Sam Say, former colleague at CCBR, joins me today. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so that together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show. Welcome back to all you longtime listeners, new listeners. Joy to have you along for the ride. I know that Sam is a big name in a lot of circles, and I am thrilled to have him back on the show. Good friend of the show. Worked with him here at CCBR, and it is a joy to be able to reconnect with him. He has a lot of very good measured commentary going on right now. You can find him on Twitter. You can find him on his blog. He joins for lots of different radio shows and all that kind of thing. And so he's a great dude. Missing him and his wife and family. They're now down in Ohio. I'm up here in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And yeah, we're just going to dive into some bonus content, some considerations about the upcoming American election. I spoke earlier this week about how to navigate conversations about politics, particularly about Donald Trump in conversations. So check that out if you haven't already. I'll drop it in the show notes below. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Sam Say, the, I don't even know what he calls himself, of Slow to Write, executive director, the king of Slow to Write, whatever you want to call him. He's a great dude. Here's my conversation with him. All right, folks. Sam Say, how you doing, sir? Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. It's been a while since I was on the show. Must be like, what, 3, maybe 4 years ago?
Yeah, man. It's been ages, and a lot has changed. I don't know. Are you still in touch with Peter Boss at all, or where are things at with him?
You know, I made sure that once I left Canada, I wanted nothing to do with that guy. Oh, okay. I said, I'm cutting him off.
Prudence.
No. he and I chat once in a while, but we haven't really like caught up a lot. It's just mostly just, you know, little. I think the last time I had a chat with him was maybe 3 or 4 months ago. So it's not as often as I would like.
Gotcha. He's an awesome dude. He's doing well. Yes, he is. Definitely. I will say hi to him on your behalf, and you say hi to him on my behalf next time you chat with him. He's an awesome dude. For those who are new to the show, Peter was longtime host with me on the show, but we can reminisce about Peter Boss at another time too, I'm sure, Sam, and the beautiful man that he is. Let's talk America, because obviously you work for CCBR here in Canada. You are a team member with us, intern, staff member, all that kind of thing. You and your lovely wife moved down to the States. You are living in Ohio, is that correct?
Yes, I'm living in Ohio, Central Ohio.
Central Ohio. What has that been like, especially diving in? I know that you've been there for a little bit now, but going into a 2024 election, what is the atmosphere like in Central Ohio, coming to what some people are, I don't know if they're doing it to try to inflate media numbers or what, calling one of the biggest elections in American history and all this kind of thing. Every election feels like some people think it's the biggest election ever. What has that been like moving into mid-state Ohio?
Man, it is so interesting. You know, being from Canada, right? We have a better understanding of American culture and politics than many would know. You know, there's that. I think it's about 70 or 80% of Canadians live about an hour away from the border. So because of that, right, we just know a lot more. I mean, it's funny, when my wife met me, she was surprised that she would claim that I knew American politics better than she did, right? That's just because, you know, when you're in the issue of the abortion issue and all that kind of stuff, you just care a lot about the cultural political issues, especially in the US, right? Because we know how much that influences Canada. So I knew a lot about it, but yet by the same time, being here, it's pretty crazy. it's pretty fascinating to be in it, right? It's sometimes I'm like, wow, how did I end up here, right? It's in good and bad ways, right? So one of the first things that I noticed right away, and again, we already knew this, I guess, in Canada, but being surrounded by it now, is that Canadians, every nation is political in its own way, but Canada, we are much more apathetic about politics. At least like real politics in terms of just being knowledgeable, being aware of what's going on in Canada. I mean, I don't know about you, but I would say, to me, the very first time that I've seen Canadian politics become like the major topic in the culture, to me, I mean, of course you have elections and you have things like that, but in terms of a political issue really becoming the major topic that would even bring in protesting, to me, was really just the lockdowns, right? What happened with the convoy. That's the first time that I really saw politics. So imagine what was going on with that, right? And I think that's basically America every week. it's basically kind of like that. But Canada, we're much more apathetic about abortion. Whereas in the US, they care much more deeply. It's you know who's a Democrat and who's a Republican. I mean, I was saying to my wife that I recently saw someone with the American flag on their truck, and right away I know who they're voting for, right? And that's unfortunately a pretty sad reality about American politics. I'm forgetting part of what you asked, but you know, being in Central Ohio, being in a small town, which is definitely Trump country. If you were to drive around my area, yeah, you will see so many Trump flags and things like that. So it's been really interesting to see. This is my first time, of course. You know, I moved here in 2022, and this is my first time really seeing the what it's like here during the presidential election.
That's delivering, and that's so interesting because I am not a super political dude, but I have definitely seen more presidential debates than I have for prime ministers in Canada, kind of thing, going into elections. And I feel like
I'm curious, everybody else,
right? Like I remember seeing John McCain up there and Mitt Romney and whatever. And like this was as a kid that really didn't know much or care much about politics, but like it dominated the scene, and like you knew that it was going to get talked about at school or at university or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and I wonder your thoughts on, like you mentioned, with abortion and other cultural, social issues being in play. I mean, we get asked often, and I know that political groups like Right Now and Campaign Life Coalition, whatever, in Canada, like so often they get asked, like, but what is the difference? Like, what is the difference between the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party? Because the Conservative Party isn't doing anything for abortion. Conservative Party isn't doing anything for any of these other social issues, traditional marriage, whatever. Is it fair to say that people care more about politics, or people are invested more in politics in America because it's more the dividing line is more profound, that it's not just minor economic issues and immigration policies? Obviously, those are factors as well in American politics, but that there's also major social issues and major differences between your options in American politics. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. As you said so eloquently, in Canada, the real issues between the, I mean, think about it, right? You have the NDP, the Liberal Party, and the Conservative Party. The NDP obviously is basically like, I'll be as kind as possible, significantly left, right? Then you have the Liberal Party, that's also significantly left, but just not quite as left as the NDP, who are, you know, very socialist, more so than the Liberal Party. And then you have the Conservative Party, which is conservative by name only. You know, look, I love Pierre Poilievre. I've been following him, but you and I know, on the issue of abortion, he is awful on abortion. Yeah, he's awful on abortion and on all the social issues too. But because he's strong on the economy, a lot of people, including pro-life people, are going to vote for him because also he's much more friendly to us than the rest. Even though his party has said they will not vote or support any kind of bill that would even reduce abortion, never mind even ending it completely. So that's what we have here in Canada, right? And so all that is, what that means is, while there are some differences, it's not very major. So that's why I think it's rare to have something like what happened in 2022 with the convoy, because there's not much difference to create just very passionate debates. There should be because of the issue of abortion, but it's just not that common. Whereas here in the US, there is a big difference. Now, I think that big difference is slowly changing, which we'll talk about in a second, but you do have very different visions of America from the Democrats and Republicans. Very, very different. And because of that, look, I'll say this publicly. I've said to my wife that while I think America, because of the nature of its founding, its constitution, and its checks and balances, while I think it is a healthier nation than Canada in many ways, I think that America has greater potential to destroy itself than Canada does, in the sense that Canada, I think we're dying in by, you know, like, what is it? A death by a thousand cuts or something like that. Right. We're kind of dying. The US, I think, would just be death by explosion. There's so much tension going on. You see it right with the presidential, with the assassination attempt against Trump. Right, you have the attempts against his life twice in one election cycle. And then, never mind the fact that he's also being politically persecuted by his rival, that he might be in jail. I mean, everyone's kind of forgot about this, but he might be in jail. I don't think that will happen, but who knows, right? So there's just so much more differences here, which is leading to much more division and anger between people.
Gotcha. Yeah. That I think that's a great way to put it in it. And I'm curious how that trickles down, like you said, to the social fabric, the me's and the you's of society. Of like, obviously the temperature is a lot hotter in a lot of ways, and you see that get whipped up at debates and rallies and conventions and all that kind of thing. Is it What is it? Because I know families here in Canada where every member of the family is voting for a different party, including the Green Party and the Elephant Party kind of thing. And that they all sit around the dinner table and sing Kumbaya before dinner. And then they all go their separate ways to their different political events. And there's no animosity whatsoever. And maybe there ought to be a little bit more tension between families that hold those wide array of worldviews. But like, does that trickle down into the culture? Because obviously here in Canada, a lot of the media coverage is looking at how riled up this convention or that convention. And you wonder, okay, is this going to explode into the streets, right? And like in Canada, you only ever see that when the Canucks lose the Stanley Cup kind of thing. And that's the only thing that's going to get you riled up enough. I mean, that's literally the only other thing that came to mind when you're mentioning the convoy of like, well, if we lose the cup, then we might go to the streets as well. But do you know what I mean? Does that trickle into, not that you're looking over your shoulder at the grocery store kind of thing, or like being concerned about what color jackets and whatnot, but like, does that enter into day-to-day life in the grocery store, in the church, in the office buildings kind of thing? Does that political divide really play out culturally and socially at that micro level as well, or not quite as much as we might be led to believe?
Yeah, I would say, not quite as much as some might be led to believe. Okay. Now, don't get me wrong. I think culturally, the divide is very evident, right? No doubt about it. I mean, you know, for example, I don't know about you, but I can't think of the last time a Canadian celebrity endorsed Trudeau or a liberal leader or a conservative. Maybe they did. We just didn't care. It wasn't relevant to us. Whereas here, just, you know, recently, everyone's been talking about Taylor Swift endorsing Kamala Harris. It's a big deal here, right? So, but in terms of the micro level, in terms of the grocery stores, people generally don't really care. There seems to be people just living their lives. In ways that's kind of actually surprised me. As much as I've talked about how the tensions here of sorts are much more evident than they are in Canada, at the same time, you know, I've been surprised by the lack of strong reactions that I was expecting from Trump when Trump was nearly assassinated on live TV. That really shocked me. I thought I was with my wife's family, my in-laws, and when that whole thing happened, and we prayed immediately for peace, you know, because we were worried, oh man, what's going to happen now? And I thought, oh man, there might be chaos and but honestly, it was just like nothing seemed to be different. And that was really strange to me because there clearly is a lot of anger and fear, but yet it seems like just on a day-to-day basis, people are just trying to, you know, just go to work, feed their families, And you know, in many ways, that's part, I guess, an oddly part of the passion that people have, because people are just trying to protect their family, trying to feed their families. They just want their day-to-day lives to stay the same. They don't want change. And I think that's the fear that the Democrats and the Republicans, sorry, the Democrats and Kamala Harris, to many people are just concerned that they would change their daily lives. And then in many ways, people are also afraid, you know, sometimes for maybe the right reasons or for incorrect reasons, that Donald Trump will just change everything for them, right? Because the media is saying all these things about him as well. So, but at a micro level, I have not seen that kind of division the way that some might think would be very common.
That makes a ton of sense. And I appreciate you sharing that, because I mean, from this vantage point, it's always interesting to see. I feel like, again, COVID really taught people that media is a business, and that it's a business of attention and attraction and whatnot. And that so often, I feel like more and more in the last decade or two here, that media is becoming, okay, we got to get eyeballs. We got to make this must watch television or whatever consumption method you have. I'd love to talk a lot about Donald Trump, Republican policies, and as you alluded to, how they're not quite as different as they once were, or that many people think that they are. Maybe before we do that, just a quick word on, and it's tough to have just a quick word on how detrimental Kamala Harris and Democrat presidential win would be, but maybe let's just address that before we get into the errors that I think you've done such a great job of highlighting, that Republicans are trying to fight fire with fire, but really we're fighting sin with sin, kind of thing, with outright lies and really belligerently attacking people in ways that are not appropriate. Maybe a quick word towards Kamala Harris and the Democrats, and what the likability, if you're comparing presidential candidates as like, well, I'd rather have Kamala Harris at my wedding. You know, if I had to choose between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, who would I rather have at my wedding? And I'm concerned that Donald Trump is going to roll up there and think that it's an open mic and just start shooting off at the hip kind of thing. And you know what? Kamala Harris is probably going to do the polite golf clap and not make a ruckus. Therefore, I'm going to vote for her for the election because I want her at my wedding more than the other guy. What are your kind of core reminders or talking points when you just try to help people realize that, you know what, let's talk about the imperfections of Trump, but let's not let the main thing cease to be the main thing. Let's talk about Kamala Harris for a moment, I guess.
Yeah. As you said, I've been critical of Trump for a number of reasons. And some people don't like that, but it doesn't mean that I think there is a moral equivalency between the two. Mm-hmm. Nor does it mean that I think that Kamala Harris is a better option. No doubt about it. No way. I mean, no way is that true. She obviously, on the issue that you and I care most about, the issue of abortion, she's absolutely horrific. She is. I know it's been said so many times, and perhaps, and that maybe seems to lead people to just become more and more uncaring about it because it's been said so many times, but she really is the most radical potential candidate on the issue of abortion that America's had yet. You know, some people know about the Planned Parenthood, you know, when they were exposed back in, man, was it 2017, maybe 2018? I don't remember. And she played a major role in shutting that down and persecuting these people, ruining their lives, harming their lives. She's played it even now. I mean, played a major role in, you now have so many pro-life advocates who are in prison, including like grandparents who are in prison, really targeting them. And that's not even talking about just the bills, right? So Tim Walz, her vice president, nominee anyways, Minnesota has one of the most radical laws right now on the issue of abortion. I think starting from last year, where it's just completely the children. It's very much like Canada's law on abortion, or no law on abortion, I should say, whereas babies have zero rights whatsoever. And she nominated him for that reason. And then you also have the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, where they were aborting children at the DNC. Just insane. Never, like, even 4-8 years ago, that was probably unthinkable. But now it's just like, that's just the norm. And then just on so many other things, just of course, outside the issue of abortion, but just when it comes to a lot of the social issues that we care about, the LGBT issues, free speech, just also hinted at targeting, as Trudeau has said himself too, targeting the Prince of Care centers as well too, right? So all these different things, and of course the economy and all these different things out there, it's not even close. Donald Trump, while I'm not his biggest fan, he is easily, significantly a better option than Kamala Harris. And the reason why I think some people are so fearful and you're willing to ignore some of Trump's faults is because I am not the kind of person that would say, I mean, I've only been here for a couple of years, but even from just knowing American history and everything else, I wouldn't say it's the end of America as we know it if Kamala Harris wins. Maybe, I don't know if I can say this, but maybe that's because I think all of our Western nations are already on a very down, I think things are already not going great. I think it's just a regression to what has been started for decades already, you know? So I think she might just be continuing what's happening already. However, the reason why I think people are saying that is because already right now, her and Joe Biden being in office that people want to, you know, forget about, oddly, they've been radical. They've harmed America in so many ways. And the prospect of her being the president after Joe Biden, making things even worse. And because of just the animosity that she has for America's founding principles and how bad things are already right now, they're thinking, man, how much worse could it get with her? And I think that's leading to some, and understandably, a lot of fears about what will America look like, right? Because, especially because she's also persecuting with Joe Biden, Donald Trump. Donald Trump has his faults, but how they're going about this, I mean, it's unheard of for America to really persecute a candidate like Trump, a former president like Trump, and it seems like it's, again, politically driven. All of that just brings about a lot of anxiety and fears to people in terms of, well, if they're doing that to Donald Trump, will they be doing it to us? Well, they've been doing it already to pro-life people, and there's concerns that, again, it might be expanded to include other people as well.
No, I think that's a great way to put it, and I think that people, I mean, I did a podcast recording that'll be coming out 2 days before this one comes out about how, and I'm curious your thoughts on the analogy. Obviously, at CSBR, we trot out the toddler all the time kind of thing. And excuse me. You know, to imagine that you've got a very likable candidate who thinks it's okay to kill human beings up until 2 years after they're born. And they're very likable and they're very polite and they're very seemingly well put together and they've got complicated other things. And you've got another person who's, I don't quite call bonkers, but like somebody who isn't quite as seemingly likable. And you know what? They're not perfect. They support killing born children up until eight weeks after they're born. There's still a gigantic gap between those. And you know, we need to have a better alternative, obviously. But if that's our alternative, we still have to let these big things be the biggest things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unfortunate that we have to make some of these choices, that we have to think about it. You know, I think it's been, again, we say these things so often that it can be overlooked by a lot of people. But we're, you know, in any election cycle, you know, and it's true for basically every nation, but especially these days in the West, you truly are picking between the greater evil and the lesser evil. And that's in of itself is saddening, right? That especially for those of us who are pro-life, that we're not usually enthusiastic about the candidate. Usually they're letting us down and we're just thinking, well, unfortunately, we got to look at, okay, what is most beneficial to our cause? Who's most friendly to us, even though they are and the enemies of preborn babies, right? Who might be most friendly? And that in of itself is devastating to think about and the consequences that it has on our nations.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish that the most important issue in an election could be economic policy, or I wish that the most important issue could be something like that. I mentioned on the other podcast about how I've got a book by Winston Churchill where it's a commentary of his political opponents and colleagues and whatnot, just like I think he went through almost everybody who was a sitting politician in Britain at the time. It was published in the early 1930s kind of thing. And the things that they disagreed about, and like, holy cow, if only that was the case now, like if only my choice was between somebody who thought that we should be investing more into steam infrastructure or pursuing further in the horses kind of thing. You're like, okay, well, a kinder, gentler world, but they weren't having to argue about whether or not it was okay to kill babies. that would be really cool. Maybe let's tackle that of were you surprised and either way surprised or frustrated when Donald Trump comes out? I know that a lot of conservatives have tried to pump the brakes on him both before this election and elections before of, you know, this isn't the shining pro-life hero that we want him to be. His policy has changed. First of all, is that a surprise? And second of all, how did that reshape the conversation, if at all, around this election, I guess?
Yeah, that's a great question. In some ways, I wasn't surprised. In some ways. The first reason is because we know that while Trump was very strong, surprisingly very strong on the issue of abortion, being extremely pro-life, some say the most pro-life presidents of all time. I didn't really buy that. I know Jonathan Van Meren definitely doesn't like that. He despises that. but regardless, he was very strong, clearly, right? I mean, his nominations for the Supreme Court, especially, just vital, historic in being able to overturn Roe v. Wade. But then, unfortunately, in 2022, when he was out of office, just 2 years ago, the midterm elections, when the Republicans did not do as well as people hoped they would, he immediately, along with others, blamed it on the pro-life movement. He blamed it on the laws that were now triggered because of Roe v. Wade being overturned. And that really concerned me. And since then, he's just been really increasingly getting worse and worse with his rhetoric about the issue of abortion and his really seems like a frustration or animosity with the pro-life movement. So it didn't surprise me at first, but what surprised me is just how much worse, and I won't use the word bold because it's not bold whatsoever. It's really cowardly, but how much more candid he's become on the issue of abortion in terms of just really being now, I would have called him pro-life before, regardless of what his personal views were, because I was, you know, I wasn't convinced that personally. I mean, there were some parts, like he would talk in 2020 during the election, during the RNC, the Republican National Convention, he had a talk about abortion that honestly, I was weeping as I was watching it. I was weeping in part because I was like, well, one, the issue just itself, right? It's horrific. But then also I'm like, man, I've never seen anyone in Canada. No conservative politician has ever talked about abortion the way this man has. And I was envious of that for our nation. And then I was also just grateful that what he's doing here is going to save lives, the way he's describing it. You and I, obviously, you know, we appreciate the value of AVP. And while he wasn't showing AVP, just the way he was talking about the graphic nature of abortion. He mentioned how it would rip the baby from the mom and just, and I'm like, man, babies are probably going to be saved from just what he is saying here. And then he goes and do, you know, what he did through overturning Roe v. Wade. And now to see what he's doing now, the things he's saying now, and talking about how he is pro-IVF, which kills a lot of babies that people don't talk enough about that. It kills a lot of babies. And if not, they're just frozen, you know, indefinitely. But then also coming out and talking about how he was planning to vote for the amendments in Florida that would also just radical abortion law. And that's just, you know, it's been really saddening to see that. So I've been surprised by how much worse he's become on that. But I did kind of see this coming because of what he was saying in 2022. I was at a conservative conference a month or two ago, and it was a Christian conservative conference. And he was there. He spoke there. and to talk about, you know, to answer your question about my surprise, even at that conference, he had the gall to talk about how essentially we had to compromise on the issue of abortion to win elections. Now, it's one thing if you believe that, look, you're strongly pro-life, you think it's wrong, but maybe you're not going to make that a big focus on this election because you're still pro-life, but you want to, you know, you don't want it to be a distraction, although it's a good distraction, right? It's an important issue. Nevertheless, if you don't want to make that a big issue, I can understand that a little bit, right? But again, at this conference for evangelicals, pro-life people, he was out there talking about how, no, he believes that abortion is sometimes right in the issues, in the cases of so-and-so. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I was thankful that some people booed him, booed him for that. But it was just crazy. So anyway, so I've been very surprised by just how much more radical he's become on that, especially because his legacy, I would say his greatest legacy in his first term was the issue of the pro-life record and overturning Roe v. Wade. That was his greatest success, but now he's completely destroying his legacy on that.
Yeah, and you touch on the Florida amendment, and I think that you had a great article up on the Florida Right blog, and I'll drop it in the show notes below about, and I was talking to Mark Harrington from Created Equal recently about how people, many pro-lifers in many ways still have their heads in the clouds of 2022 with the overturning of Roe versus Wade and haven't woken up to the fact that we're 0-6 and by the end of 2024, we could be close to 0-20 kind of thing. I mean, we'd be 0-16, 0-17, yeah, depending on whether or not you even count New York and California as fights kind of thing. Maybe an extra thought on that and how this is something that I don't know if it's getting forgotten going into this election because of how much the media is pushing people towards the divide between Harrison and Trump. But maybe a thought on what's going on at the state level and how all of the work that went into overturning Roe v. Wade, not that it's being undone, but that maybe the foot isn't on the gas pedal as much as it should be going into these constitutional amendments and whatnot at the state level.
Yeah, you mentioned Mr. Harrington. He's in Ohio. I'll actually be in a conference with him in Orlando in maybe 3 or 4 weeks.
To talk about a couple of our CSPR people are going to be down for that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
oh,
Virginia's going to be there and a few others. Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. Oh, I'm so happy to. Oh, you've made my day. I'm so happy to hear that. I can't wait. To be with them. Yeah, I mentioned him because in Ohio, which was a quote unquote pro-life state, as you know, last year issue one, a similar amendment as what's going on right now across the U.S. completely the pro-life we had a heartbeat bill that was triggered after Roe v. Wade was overturned, and because of the animosity people have for just strong pro-life bills, they ended up voting for a radical bill that now, again, is very much like Canada's, where you can now have an abortion at any point during pregnancy. And it's been so horrific that I'm now planning. I mean, obviously, I'm still involved in the issue of abortion, but I haven't been doing choice chaining and activism the way I would want to, the way I was doing it in Canada. But now I'm like, you know what? Even though I'm further away from Created Equal with Mark Harrington, I'm actually going to start choice chaining myself with some help, but primarily just me. And because I'm just seeing this devastation it's creating already in Ohio. But these bills, it's, you know, Mr. Harrington is right. Mark Harrington is right by saying that the pro-life movement still has its heads in the clouds. And it's understandable, right? Roe v. Wade was such a massive, massive win, a historic win, one of the greatest news we've had, I would say, in American history. It just itself, it's just incredible that it was overturned. And to see that just 2 years after that, how quickly things are changing with momentum, right? Because here's the thing, you know, it's become more obvious that voting for pro-life politicians and voting for the issue of abortion itself are two different things. And we are realizing that. I think we weren't prepared for that. That there are people who might be who might say they're pro-life, but they're saying they're pro-life because they generally dislike abortion, or at least maybe radical abortion, but doesn't mean that they support heartbeat bills. They might say, well, it should still be legal to maybe 15 weeks and then ban after that. We're seeing that now, where even right now in North Dakota, I mentioned this in an article that you referenced, which is a very strong Republican state, or another strong pro-life state, even stronger than Ohio, where right now they're about to lose. I think it's 75% of the people there are Republicans. And right now the trending is that they're about to lose that, which would, again, would create a radical bill also on abortion. So it seems like, again, you know, we were not prepared for what would happen. We knew that some states would have worse laws on abortion, but we just didn't think that the abortion lobby would take this, would have this strategy of making it a referendum. And to Mark Harrington's credit, I remember the day when review was overturned, I was actually with him, and I remember him telling me how concerned he was about this. Most people were not thinking about this, but he was very concerned that this is what would be the plan going forward. And they've seen how it's worked in places like in Ohio. They now smell blood, literally. They now know that it's very effective going forward. And I really hope that the pro-life movement will figure out just ways to end this. Otherwise, it's just going to be devastating all the more.
Yeah, I remember talking to Mark the day after Roe was overturned, and him talking about, you know what, pro-lifers have demonstrated how good they've been at politics over the last several decades. Now we're going to see how good we are at education. How strong are we at engaging the culture? Yes. Because these are referendums, right? These aren't, can we punch above our weight? When everyone's punch is the same, and we are losing the battle of the media, we're losing the battle of the language and communications around this, that the pro-abortion engine has been able to capitalize on heart-wrenching stories and all this kind of thing, and pull down misinformation. But that pro-lifers are not making the main issue the main issue. He and I recently did an episode on how, you know, we have to be mindful of the impact of abortion on parents and mothers in particular. But to forget about the children entirely, it's ironic that the pro-life movement that's been so focused and so frequently accused of caring only about the child and not about the mother at all, now has a media strategy that appears to only care about the mother, and we're forgetting about the child at times, and how important, when we look at North Dakota, when we look at Florida, obviously you're going to be in Florida. We're going to have some CCPR folks down in Florida trying to do some campaigning and trying to help people remember what the main issue is in this, and that you don't kill humans to solve problems. There's problems in our world. There's no getting around that, but you don't kill humans to solve problems.
Amen. Amen. And look, I know you did not ask me to do this whatsoever, and you don't even know what I'm going to say next.
I have no idea.
But I will tell you what you just said about repeating what Mark Harrington said about how important it is for us to educate the public. I moved out of Canada, and I left CCBR shortly before that, preparing for me to move here, and I cannot tell you how much I miss. Doing work with CCBR, doing activism with CCBR, because CCBR's work is vital, vital. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a former employee there. I'm saying that because it's true. CCBR's work is vital. What Created Equal is doing in the U.S. is vital. You can have all these laws, but as we've been saying so many times, the public will not support laws if they do not have, if they've not been educated on the issue of abortion. They will not support good laws anyways if they're not. The reason why here in Ohio, the heartbeat bill had no, did not have the kind of support that it should have, is because even though they're going to be voting for a Republican candidate or a pro-life candidate, it wasn't because they really understood why anti-abortion laws, pro-life laws are necessary. Because unfortunately, many people are still really, they might say they're pro-life, but they're pro-abortion, which is why I'm sure you've done it before too. Whenever I'm doing activism, when I ask somebody, hey, what do you think about abortion? They say, oh, I'm pro-life. I don't end it there, right? We know this, right? We ask, well, you know, yeah, because we've learned, we know some people say they're pro-life and no, they're not, right? So, you know, so what I'm saying here is, I'm telling you again, I wasn't asked to say this whatsoever, but if you're listening to this, please, please, please consider supporting CCBR. Please do it. Because, you know, right now, again, you see what's happening here, right? Roe v. Wade has been overturned and is great. But unfortunately, because of some of these laws that are still, that have been established, more babies are being killed than even before, right? The abortion pill is now, I think, represents over half of the abortions in the U.S. and also true in Canada. So it's vital. If you want to end abortion, it's not just by voting for a pro-life politician. You must support pro-life people changing the minds of the public so that the public then can change the minds of the pro-life or the politicians, right? So again, I promise you I wasn't asked to say this, but I really recommend that you do. I really do, because it's vital, right? We can't change the culture without changing minds about these cultural issues like abortion.
I appreciate you saying that. And that's what it comes down to, the training, right? And how, I mean, it's uncomfortable to go and talk to a neighbor, talk to a friend, talk to a coworker, talk to a complete stranger in your community about the topic of abortion with an attitude of, I need to win this person. I'm not just trying to win this argument. I'm not just trying to win this election. I'm not trying to win a short-term gain. I'm trying to win this person for the pro-life worldview. And that's daunting. That can be intimidating. That can be hard. But it's not as hard as people think, first of all. Both you and I have seen that you know, there's tough days doing activism. Not everyone changes their mind, far from it. But the conversations rarely have the animosity that people anticipate. Sometimes they do, but that's part of the challenge that we work with. But yeah, trying to look at how do we win this in the long run, because I also feel like as a small C conservatives kind of thing, like, yeah, we want to be able to forget about the problems in our world and we just want to go home and love our wives and children and not have to be out on the offensive constantly. And yet we just have to accept the fact that this is a tug of war that will continue for a very, very, very long time until Christ comes again. We are going to be fighting this tug of war. And though it might be shallow and convenient to say that the opposition doesn't have wives and families that they have to care about and so they can work around the clock, there is something of truth in that. And we have to be mindful that winning people for the truth can happen, and it can happen efficiently and effectively, but it needs boots on the ground. It needs people knocking on doors. It needs people on street corners having those uncomfortable conversations and dealing with it, because that also flows downstream into politics and all that kind of thing. So, no, I think you're bang on. Yeah. And you are, I mean, I know that CCPR has been able to become something of a leader here in the Canadian pro-life movement. And yet I look at America and look at the incredible titans that you guys have down there. You look at the Mark Harringtons, you look at the Scott Klusendorfs and the Equal Rights Institutes and the Greg Cunninghams and how many entities there are. And they all bring a slightly different flavor to the conversation, and there's going to be things that people appreciate from one and maybe not from another. But yeah, there's so many opportunities to get involved in that educational side.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I've been really amazed and grateful for just the number of organizations out there doing great work. Obviously, we have a few in Canada that I'm very grateful for, but here in the U.S., you're right. There's all these titans, all these people that are doing, in even like smaller communities, just it seems like everywhere I go, I'm meeting people. There's also these new groups coming up as well too, and that's been very encouraging. And yet we still need so much more. We need so much more. So
absolutely. I we could go on all afternoon. I'm going to start winding this down with a few frequently asked questions, because I'm sure that, I mean, you've been speaking all over. I feel like every time I see you on Twitter or Facebook, you're talking about speaking at another conference here or commenting on this or that or the other thing. Like, I don't know if you always do Q&As associated with the talks that you give or how much you get into the comment section of your Twitter profile and whatnot. What do you find are the biggest things that you're seeing within, whether it's the evangelical scene, whether it's within the local Christian broader or Republican? What are the biggest topics that you're seeing demand better answers than people are currently getting given, I guess?
Wow, that's a great question. Man, there's a lot. It's hard for me to... Okay. As it relates to this election, or just mean in general?
Just kind of in general, but especially in this current culture moment of like questions that are being frequently asked within the circles that you're involved with, that you're saying, you know what, people are getting weaker answers than they deserve. They deserve something better than what they're getting, I guess.
Wow, that might be the best question. I think that's really. I'm having to think here. I might. You can put on the what is that? Is that the Jeopardy song or whatever it is?
I only got a couple here. I got a ballpark sound. I got drums, but I don't have any. I don't have Jeopardy, unfortunately, on my reel here.
No problem. That's good. Commonly asked questions that people are not giving good answers to. I think one of the first things that comes to mind, and I don't know I don't know if it's a commonly asked question. I mean, I've been seeing it being said a lot, but I know that there haven't been good answers for this. For what I've seen myself. And I think a lot of it comes down to, we've mentioned, you know, when it comes to Trump and Kamala Harris, we've talked about how Kamala Harris is a horrible candidate, but Trump isn't a great candidate either. He's not whatsoever. So for that reason, now I think a lot of people are engaged for sure. Most people are going to vote. There's going to be a huge voter turnout, I think. Again, probably going to be bigger than what it was in 2020. But at the same time, I think a lot of evangelicals are just thinking, with Trump, why should we care? Why should we go out there and vote for this person? And, you know, the common answer, I think, is usually because a vote for him is a vote against Kamala Harris. And that's true. And that is a good answer. But I think the reality comes down to this. While Trump is worse than what he was in 2020, it's not like he exactly was a great man at that time either. And he was able to, and you know what, even before I even get to that, we've seen, because I was going to say that he's able to be influenced by the pro-life movement, by evangelicals, in ways that I've not seen with any other presidential candidate. Now Bush was very close with the evangelicals, but even with him, partly because he was already firm on these issues already, but even with him, it's not like he was as, I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's not like he's as easily influenced in a good sense as Donald Trump is. Because, for example, we mentioned the Amendment 4 or 3, I'm forgetting which amendment it is. I think it's 4, because I think 3 is with something else. In Florida, where Amendment 4, where he came out saying that he would vote yes on it. And when he said that, the pro-life movement, in no uncertain terms, made it very clear that we were not happy. He was sharply rebuked for it. People said, Lila Rose was very strong in saying that, no, this is not right. And people threatened that they might not vote for him. And the next day he came out. Now we're going to assume the best and believe that he is being honest, right? But let's just say that. But even him publicly saying that reduces the harm that he caused by even saying yes on, you know, how he'd be voting for Amendment 4. And again, that's, I think, very rare. Politicians go back and forth all the time. But to me, how quickly he changed his mind on that and how he was pressured by the pro-life movement to change his mind and to come out saying no, he would no longer be voting yes on Amendment 4. That to me is a good sign that no matter what he is saying now, there is a good chance that the pro-life people around him, and from what I know people who are part of his circle, I know of them anyways, and many of them are strong pro-life people. And I think that there's a good chance that they might actually be able to, as they did before in the past, lead him towards a better pro-life position. And I think it's also true for other issues as well, to go hopefully going forward. That's maybe an answer that I think people have not understood as well, that I think is helpful. I can't think of anything else now.
I think that's fantastic. I think there's a lot of wisdom there in being able to hone in on that topic and realize that this is a big thing that we got to be paying attention to. One thing that came into my mind, and I won't keep you all afternoon, I promise. I get back to your other stuff.
I'm enjoying this.
you had a great consideration on the tragedy, obviously, of the young mom in Georgia who the Democrats are going to beat that drum, I'm sure, steadily, not only for these 10 amendment cases, but for the federal election as well, around this notion that this mother is purely a victim, and if only there were not abortion bans in these places, handcuffing medical practitioners, then she would be alive today. She'd be caring for her son. She'd be doing all this kind of stuff. And I think he had a lot of wisdom on that when it came to, this is not the solution. I feel like so often pro-lifers hear this and they get nervous and they say, okay, well, maybe we need to start putting more exemptions into our abortion bills. And maybe they're right. Like, abortion might be medically necessary. Not only do we have over 1,000 medical practitioners who have signed on to a statement saying that abortion is never medically necessary, but again, we're letting the main thing cease to be the main thing, that this mother chose to take the abortion pill. And that was part of why she ended up, not part of it, that was the entire reason why she ended up with this infection in the first place. And mm-hmm. that, yes, she should have gotten medical intervention to cure her from sepsis, but the solution is not legalizing abortion. I thought you had a great point on that. I'm curious if what the response has been to you shining a bit of a light on that and exposing this as a lie, that no, pro-lifers don't need to weaken their stance. Neither do they need to condemn her as a terrible, awful, wicked person kind of thing, that yeah. there is a way that pro-lifers can be compassionate and empathetic and charitable without opening up access to abortion.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always say that we can be candid and kind. I never want to mince words. Again, going back to AVP, right? AVP yeah. is you see the horrific nature of abortion. I want my words, as a writer, I want my words to be able to capture the horrific nature of abortion the way that AVP does. Now, that's one big influence that CCBR has had on me. And so I never want to mince words on abortion, but I also never want to be unkind. I never want to be sinning, you know, while I'm trying to end sin, right? That's just not, you can't be satanic and trying to drive out, you know, Satan. That's not how it works. So I appreciate what you're saying there. But yeah, one of the things that I really wanted to communicate in addressing that issue is I wanted to go on the attack, not the defensive. So often the pro-life movement, as you said, we are so fearful of these things. No, the media is lying about this because they know the truth. The truth harms them. They know this. They know that. That's why they're lying about what really caused her death. So I want to say, no, she died. And it's horrific that she died in this way. But the reality is that she died because of the abortion pill. This isn't about the consequences of pro-life bills. It's clearly the consequences of the abortion pill. She died because of abortion. Right? That's the tragedy of it. Not just her, of course, but her twins. It's horrific. There are three people who died from this, right? So what needs to happen here is we need to say, guys, the pro-life, so the pro-abortion movement claims that the pill, the abortion pill, is even safer than Tylenol. I don't know of any, right? It's a complete lie. And we need to begin to be addressing this. It's horrific because many people don't know this. So I'm actually going to write an article about this for Friday, this week. And I want to really communicate as much as I possibly can. You know, I want to be kind. I want to be compassionate because I don't want anyone to die even as they're sinning, right? It's saddening. It's horrific. If it was somebody that I knew, and we all know people who've had abortions, right? I'll be devastated. I don't want this. I'm sad about her children. I'm also sad about her dying as well. But the reality is that it's not the pro-life movement that failed her, right? It is the abortion pill that she took, right? Recommended by the pro-abortion people that have failed her. And they're still failing her by lying about what caused her death. I If I can't imagine. It's not, you don't love by, the Bible says that love does not rejoice at wrongdoing. You're not loving someone. You're not caring for someone if you're sinning, if you're lying about the nature of their death. It actually shows a hate for her. If you really love her and if you really want to protect people from dying, you say, hey, yeah, guys, the abortion pill always kills the baby, but it sometimes also kills the mom, right? But they won't say that because, they'll say, well, it's very rare. It might be rare, the same way that cops killing unarmed black people might be rare, but yet it still happens when you talk about it. So even though the abortion pill is killing the mom is rare, it still happens. And it's necessary then for us to address it and for the pro-life movement to not be fearful, but to be on the attack in a kind yet candid way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's bang on. And being able to shine a light on that and say this, at times, whether it's I don't know if the doctors themselves are part of the pro-life movement, but yeah, at times giving out hand grenades to your society and then blaming the doctors for not being able to save people when the hand grenades go off kind of thing. That is absolutely backwards to think about who's the perpetrator of this problem right now. Oh, well, it's because we're underfunding our hospitals. No, it's because you're giving them grenades. It's because we are literally equipping people with weapons that are, I did an episode with the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and they had some insane stats. They were reviewing Medicaid applications for insurance or whatever, and they found that close to 25%, I want to say, I'll put the report in the show notes in case I'm way off on this, but it was something insane, 25 or 30% of people who were prescribed the abortion pill ended up in an emergency room for hemorrhaging or related concerns within a month afterwards. And that the majority of these people,
can you please send me that?
It was bonkers. And just this idea that somehow it's the pro-lifers' fault for not being able to do this, when really we've equipped people with a brutally insane, this isn't even to get into, and we won't get into it here, the links between hormonal cancers and abortion and contraception pill and cancers and all this kind of stuff. There's so much around this. And sure, a doctor might say in passing just so you know, there's a 1 in 10,000 chance that you might end up in hospital. You and I have probably heard that at the dentist before, just so you know, numbing your face might, could end up with a major thing. But the weight of that is never actually communicated, especially when it's this alarming frequency. So,
100%. And even if the number really is 1 in 10,000, when you consider that there are roughly about 600,000 or 700,000, people who've had taken an abortion pill every year in the U.S.
Yep,
that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
That's what is it? Hundreds of people, right? Yeah. That would be hospitalized for this. So that's a lot. And when that happens, you're going to have people like Amber Thurman who lose their lives. And right. You cannot blame the doctors for this. It's the cause of death. It's not the doctors. It's the pill.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's put a bow on this. I'll drop the Soda Right blog in the show notes below. You mentioned that you're going to be down in Orlando as part of the Operation Save America stuff that they're doing there for the Amendment 4. What else do you have coming down the tube?
I mentioned earlier that I'm going to be reaching out to Credit Equal soon to start maybe just get some of the signs and start doing work around here. I really miss doing that. That's hopefully going to be something in the next few months that I'll be doing. I'm trying to finish up a curriculum that I've been working on the issue of critical race theory. I'm hopefully preparing to start writing a book very soon. So it's a lot of changes. Yeah, a lot of things, new things that I'm working on. Very excited about it.
Cool. That is so exciting. I'll look forward to the book. See if I can sneak myself a signed copy at some point, because that'd be super cool.
not to give away copy, man. Stop it.
I will teach you. So I sign, I don't know how many people know this, Jonathan, I doubt that you're listening, but if you are listening, I sign your books all the time, just so you know. I sign Jonathan's books as Cam Cote, Jonathan's 14th or 15th best friend. And I just do that all the time. And so I'm going to buy a box of your books and I'll just start giving them out. Sam says, he told me that I asked him the best question he'd heard on a podcast before. I'm going to write this big note as I sign off your books. No, that's fantastic. No, I super appreciate you taking the time and chat with me here. Hopefully we can do this again soon, whether pre-election, post-election, just about anything. I've had a blast here. So I appreciate the time.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah, I thank you too. Anytime you want to have me on, let me know and I'll be on.
Beautiful. Beautiful. God bless. Bless your family, all that goes on. And yeah, hope to talk soon. All right, folks, there's my conversation with Sam Say from Slow to Right, former colleague at CCBR. He's a great dude, and I hope that you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Lots of content there, lots of wisdom and insight from Sam. Really appreciate him taking the time to join the show. I hope that you enjoyed it. Don't hesitate to let me know if you have questions, concerns, comments, ideas, topics that you'd love for me to cover, whether as core apologetics content or bonus content. As I alluded to, or I have alluded to, I am really enjoying getting back in the studio as much as I am. The bonus content, I hope that you're enjoying it as well. And look for more coming out soon. Thanks so much. May God bless you abundantly, wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.